Welcome to the Hip Hop Digest interview series. It's your man, DJ King Killer.
Don't forget about your boy, Kurt G.
And of course, it's E Color. And y'all couldn't get enough of that legendary Daddy-O situation. So, you know, we went back to Stetson Sonic again, and we got Bobby Simmons, drummer from Stetson Sonic, on the show. What up, man?
What's the deal, baby? How y'all doing over there, man?
We good.
Good. Yeah.
Well, hold on. I gotta give everybody the preface, because, you know, when after we did the show with Daddy-O, I got an email from Bobby, and I was like, oh shit, people gonna think we off that Vlad.
off that DJ Vlad shit.
I said, let me hit Daddy-O and be like, yo, I talked to Bobby, man. He's coming on the show. Ain't no sneak shit.
Nah, D, no, man. When I caught it, I was like, yo, D left a few things out, man. He should have really harped on that Capital Center things, but D's memory is not as good as mine and Wise, though. You know, we kind of remember everything that was going on around us.
Yeah, he called it. He said that, yeah.
Yeah, man. So I was listening to it, and I was like, yo, D should have went in depth. But, you know, I can continue wherever y'all want me to go.
Okay.
You might as well get in right now.
Yeah, get right in right now. On that Cap Center.
So, that's the Runs House Tour. That's what, 88?
Yeah, that was the summer of 1988, to be exact. Actually, when that tour started, we started that tour. That tour started in May. The first city we hit was Tallahassee, Florida. Was the first date on that show. When we started that tour. We actually hit the Miami area first, came back down to Atlanta. We did the Carolinas. We didn't come to D.C. until, like, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think that was probably late May or early June, if I'm not mistaken, when we did the Capitol Center.
Damn, we came down and we did. 1988, when you talking about a month and that close, I think we're going to give a pass.
Yeah. you got a hell of a memory,
yeah, it was around that time, though, because I remember when we actually did the first day, because I remember we kept asking before we was going out, because we didn't actually do the whole tour. We did the whole tour. There were certain cities we didn't go to. We didn't do Chattanooga. But we pretty much did everything else. And I kept asking what was the first. We needed the itinerary to find out what was the first date. And I remember the first spot was Tallahassee, Florida. That was the first spot we hit.
Well, what was it about D.C., though, that made it so memorable?
Well, I mean, the D.C. show was the Capitol Center was like, to us, it was the big thing. Actually, there's two sides. There's two stories to that Capitol Center. Remember, we came during that Runs House tour, and then we came back on the Public Enemy Bring the Noise tour.
Yeah, we
came back twice, and that Public Enemy Bring the Noise tour, there's something to that one. I'll get to that one in a minute. But the Runs House tour, when we did the Capitol Center, that's when we realized that our record Sally was pretty big. It was, you know, actually Sally was our first single that we released that summer of 1988 before we released the In Full Gear album. Yeah. And we remember Sally was a real big record.
Yeah, D.C. was going, was big here. Sally was huge in D.C.
Yeah, I remember, because when we came down there, we remember they had a dance called the Sally Walk Dance. And we was like, yo, they serious down there? Like, is it really good like that down there? And I remember when we did that, because that tour was actually, that was Run DMC, Public Enemy, Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, EPMD, Stetson Sonic.
Yup.
That was that package. That was that package for that tour. They kind of added acts on the bill. I remember Junkyard, was the Junkyard Band on that one?
Yes, it was. I think it was. No, it was.
Rare Essence. It was Rare Essence.
It was Rare Essence. Yeah.
Oh, Rare Essence. That's right. Yeah, because Junkyard Band did the Public to Bring the Noise tour with us. They was throwing on that one. It was Rare Essence. When we did that night at the Capitol Center, oh my God, it was like, yo, is this record really that? You know, what's funny about that record is that we had no video for that record. No video. So that proved that back then, you know, the presence of a good hip hop song, you know, the power of it was showing us that hip hop was on the merge. Like, you just had to really come and bring whatever it was that you was bringing. And, you know, and that's when we started realizing certain markets we was going in, like, our records is working in this place. Because certain cities we went into, certain songs was different in different towns. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. People were screaming at us. Y'all, like, when we went down south, we was already on our second album, but people were screaming, yo, Do On Fire. We was like, you serious? You know, like, y'all serious? Wow. Like, you're here On Fire? We were trying to bang out the Info Gear album, but that's when we knew that the album had made its mark in certain markets. And that's when we also realized, going back in history, beside Run DMC and Rick Rubin with the 808, with the TR-808, On Fire was, to us, was actually the first, I guess you call it, trap music today. They call it trap hip hop, you know, with the very low bottom 808 and, you know, the very thin, you know, hi-hat, you know, the doubling on a hi-hat and stuff like that. If you listen to On Fire, that's exactly what we did back then. So you could play On Fire right now and people will think, like, was that record made today? And it wasn't.
Wow.
It's a 1985, and it shows you how crazy we were with, though we were a live band, but technology and music, and we knew that we could do different things with the TR-808. Because remember, at the time, everybody that was using the TR-808 machine, they was using it more of a high end than a low end. The only ones who was using it as a low end was us and Run DMC. Go back in your history, Tough and Other used the low end.
That's true.
808.
Yeah, you don't think Mantronix used a lot of low end on that?
Mantronix didn't use a lot of low end until later, but very early part of that, everybody was sticking with the more high end because, you know, you had the Planet Rock going on. Everybody wanted that dancey kind of that. I don't want to call it thin, but more of a dancey type of clean sound. Where Rick Rubin, I have to credit Rick Rubin because he was doing Run DMC records back then, and us, we kind of like the low end a lot. We like that boom. Boom, a boom. We liked it that. We was like, oh, that's kind of crazy. You know what I'm saying?
That's real.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it gave us a whole nother aspect to what the drums could sound like. It was like hitting the tom-tom, but a floor tom. You know what I'm saying? It was heavier. You know, so we kind of roll with that. So, you know, when I talk to people and they be talking about the down south sound, I'm like, what you mean the down south sound? We was already on the verge of that in 1985. You know what I'm saying? And I had to, like, even to my nephews and them, I had to prove to my nephews and them, like, listen to this record. They're like, what, y'all did that a couple of months ago? I'm like, no, we did that record in 85.
Wow. You know
what I'm saying? Wow. Like, so we was already ahead of ourselves in 1985. So that down south sound y'all saying is the down south sound all came back up here on East Coast. You know what I'm saying? Because you got guys like us and Rick Rubin and Larry Smith, and we was all experimenting with certain sounds. You know, we didn't want to use that electronic sound too much because everybody was making more of dancey records, and we was trying to find a way to make it a lot more, you know, raw, more raw sound. And I, like I said, I have to credit not only just us but Rick Rubin, because Rick Rubin was doing that himself. If you remember, Rick Rubin used the TR-808 on T-La Rock, It's Yours, but he used it more as a high end. Right. You know what I'm saying?
That's yeah.
Okay. Use it more like, but we got later on, like, you mean to tell me we can tune it down and it'll rumble? And if you remember Run DMC's Tough and a Leather record, what did it do? It rumbled.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, no doubt. I got to ask you about another situation here locally. The Stetsasonic EPMD show at the 930 Club. I mean, I was stationed here. I couldn't go to that show. My man went to that show, and he said it was crazy. Why don't you tell us about that situation with you and EPMD?
Yeah, I remember, well, that was actually when we did, that was called the 930 Club. Actually, I got that on videotape. I actually own every majority of Stet shows that we did on videotape. And that's one of the shows I have on videotape, the 930 Club. And actually, we did some in-store record stores there, too. We got that on video as well. And we actually, it was during the Public Enemy tour. It was during the Bring the Noise tour. But what they did at that time was that they was breaking up certain dates. If you know, certain clubs wanted to do smaller events. And they said, well, give us two acts that's big in D.C. And EPMD and Stetsasonic was pretty, you know, we were big. And we actually just came off the, we just finished doing the European tour. We just did London and Germany, where we flipped the bill. Like, when we did London, Stetson Sonic was headlining the whole London and Europe spot, and then when we did Germany, EPMD headlined that. So we kind of flipped the bill.
Damn.
But when we came back to America, you know, we were starting the Public Enemy Bring the Noise tour, and I don't think 9:30 was the first stop, but I remember we did the 9:30 club, and it was crazy. And at the time, you know, we are rappers that kind of like had love for each other back then. It's not like how today is. You know, when EPMD dropped their album, even though we felt we had a dope album, we was like, yo, EPMD's Strictly Business album is crazy. You know, we praised those guys' album because everybody wasn't trying to copy each other. Everybody was just trying to, you know, be in their own zone and have their own style, you know, and have their own production and producers. But when we came to the 9:30 and we did that spot, man, it was crazy. And I never forget that night, man. It was like, people really showed us love down there, knowing that, and this was during October. This is what, the October, this is when we was coming out of the summer. This was October of 1988 when we did the 9:30 club. And then we came back and we did the Capitol Center with Public Enemy. And on that tour, it was Public Enemy, EPMD, Stetson Sonic, Big Daddy Kane, Ice-T. Who else was on that bill?
Wow.
And then when we got to DC, they added the Junkyard Band on it. And then they added Chuck Brown and the Soul Searchers on it. Dang. On that same package. Wow. At the Capitol Center. Now, let me tell you a story about that. That was a time, you know, at the time we was managed by Russell Simmons. Russell was, every rap act that came out, name them. Russell was managed. All of us. Big Daddy Kane, Jazzy Jeff, Fresh Prince, EPMD, Public, name them. Russell, we was all under Rush Management. Rakim, all of us. We was under Rush Management.
Because it says on the back of those records. Cohen, Rush Artist Management.
Say that again?
It says that on the back of the records.
Exactly. Rush Artist Management. So we were all under Rush Management. And at the time, Lior Cohen, he was kind of like more of a VP in charge of Rush Management. You know what I'm saying? Handling all the groups and acts. And at that time, Lior Cohen was playing favorites with certain groups. Whoever was selling the most records, you know, Lior Cohen was playing favorites to them. You know, we was Russell's favorites. Russell liked us because we were more independent. He liked Prince Paul. He liked Daddy-O. He liked us because we were more independent. We were about creating our own atmosphere and just, you know, being more unique and understanding the business. So Russell really taken a liking to us. But Lior Cohen, at that time, going back to the Capitol Center, we was on our way to the Capitol Center, so we was like, yo, when the show start, who's going to open up? So they were saying, well, the promoter was saying, well, EPMD is going to open up. And EPMD and them was like, yo, we not opening up, man. Come on, our record is down. Wow. You know, our record is big down here in D.C. You know, now we talking about October now. We already in October. So everybody's album has already been out. It's on the charts. We on our second single. Talking All That Jazz was out. We had a video for it. So Daddy-O was like, nah, man, yo, nah, Sally's a big record in D.C. We got people, they down there talking about Sally, and, you know, okay, well, cool. So here comes Lior Cohen. So everybody drives down to D.C. And, you know, so Daddy-O said, yo, man, Russell, y'all gonna have to figure this out because we real big down here in D.C., you know, and they trying to let us go on before EPMD, you know, and the promoter said he want EPMD to go on first. So EPMD, Lior Cohen was like, yeah, but Daddy-O, EPMD have a bigger record than Stetson Sonic. Strictly Business album is just, it just went gold. So Daddy-O was like, I don't care. We bigger in D.C. right now. Like, yo, for real. So EPMD, of course, you know, big shout out to Eric and Paris. Those are our boys. You know, we there was never no hate against each other back then. We loved each other. It wasn't personal. It was just business.
There you go.
So, you know what I'm saying? So they was like, yo, we don't care. You know, we can close the show. And P and was like, yo, this is our show. This is the Bring the Noise show. So we'll
all that.
Close it. So, okay, so to make a long story short, we had a meeting in Daddy-O's hotel room with Russell, and Russell was like, yo, Daddy-O, you guys is good. You open up, man. EPMD, you know, Sleeping Back Records really got a promotion on them out down here in D.C., and they got a real big record, so, you know, and this is a big show for them, so you guys go ahead. And so Daddy-O came and got it. He said, yo, y'all, We go in there and we do that show and we get on stage, man. He said, yo, let's rip them. Let's rip EPMD. And we're going to have to rip these dudes because I'm not playing. I reckon it's bigger down there. So he's like, whatever, D. Let's just do it.
Man.
So come to find out, we didn't open up. Junkyard Band opened up for us. They opened up. They opened up the show. So after Junkyard performed, so then we came on. So we came on and we did our thing. We did Sally last. We saved Sally for last. As God's my witness, Daddy on them, and everybody in the group will back this up with me. By the time we got to Sally, so, you know, everybody was beefing about, yo, they going overtime, pull the plug on them. Now, back in the days, if you went over somebody, they pulling the plug on you. So we did Sally. So by the time we got to end the Sally, you know, back in the days, we did that old school rhyme, the roof is on fire. We don't need no wool, let it burn, right?
Right.
They put the plug on us, and Daddy-O said, Bobby, keep playing the drums. And I kept playing. So all you heard was the ambience of my drums, and the people on the balcony was going crazy, just like, and we was yelling like, we had no, only sound we had was on the stage, but the house sound, they pulled the plug on us.
That's
and
crazy.
We kept rocking. After we did that, I swear to God, you can call Chuck D, you can call whoever you want. After we finished that night, Chuck Ice-T and them said, yo, Big Daddy Kane said, yo, who going next? Big Daddy Kane going next. Ice-T said, nah, man, I'm going on after Stat. Those guys, nah, I'm going on there. Ice-T was like, I'm going on. That's when Ice-T was the rhyme syndicate and all of them. He's like, nah, we going on after Stat.
Wow.
And after Ice-T, Big Daddy Kane was like, yo, I'm going on after Ice-T. And after Big Daddy Kane, you know what I'm saying? Everybody decided that they wanted to go on, you know, because it was like, yo, the crowd is in the frenzy. DC right. was hype. Right. So Chuck D said, yo, I'm going on. We are not close. Freak that. We ain't closing the show. So Public Enemy went on. So EPMD was like, yeah, so we'll close the show. I reckon it's big out here. We'll close the show.
Wow.
That was a big mistake. Big shout out to Eric and Parrish. Y'all know I'm going to tell the story the way it is. We told Eric and Parrish and them back then, the one thing you never, ever do, no matter how big your record is, no matter how big your record is, never think you can follow Chuck Brown.
Never. Oh, not here.
No, no, no.
And DC. And that's what EPMD, but that's because Leon was getting, you know, he wasn't gasping. They really had a gold record, but Leon was really giving it to him. EPMD, they big. They're going to be bigger. And then they can close the show. Close the show. Chuck Brown went on. I don't have to tell you. You from DC? They murdered, murdered. By the time EPMD came on, big shout out to Eric and Parrish, y'all boys. When the people was hitting the door by the time it came on.
Damn.
Yeah.
People was heading for the door.
Yeah. After Chuck, you can forget it.
Dude, that's what they came to.
That is the close of the show.
Yep.
Exactly. You could get it. So it's like, you know, and that's when we learn, like, yo, no matter how big you think your record is, if you can get a nice spot on a bill, kill when you get on that nice spot. But if you think you can close because your record is big and you in Chuck Brown's territory, nah.
Yeah, buddy. Let me
go on. Let me go on. Let me go out. We the best promoters. Let us go on. They was feeling good. They record, you know, and they rightfully they should have felt good because Strictly Business was the craziest album back then. But you gotta be careful when you got troopers out there who really know how to close a show.
Right.
And Chuck Brown and them, the people thought, okay, that's the end of the show. Wait a minute, EPMD ain't come on yet.
Wow.
It didn't matter. EPMD came on, people saw them for a minute. Then it was like, look, it's late. Let's head to the door. Let's get to the parking lot.
Damn.
They was heading.
Wow, that's what's up.
Well, bro, let me ask you a musical question real quick, because you are, in fact, a drummer. You make music on drums, yes? So
yeah.
How do you feel about, and I know this is, you probably get this a lot, but how do you feel about how right now it's all kind of like coming out of a machine?
Well, I mean, you know, again, at least today, you know, in hip-hop or just in music general, a lot of artists are... I have to call them lazy because they figure, well, in order to make radio today, or for them think to make like this this sounding hit record, they kind of follow a pattern. And that's what a lot of them are doing. They're following a pattern. I go back again to our first two albums, even our third album, Blood, Sweat, No Tears. I go back to the first two albums where we utilized everything. We utilized the live drum. We utilized the TR-808. We utilized everything so that it had some kind of diversity to the product. A lot of artists today are not doing that because they want everything to be product sellable. Oh, it sounds like Lil Wayne and them little trap beats, or Rick Ross and them trap beats, and whatever you want to call them. I think people today are afraid to be challenging, instrumental-wise. I mean, with the fact of the exception of the Roots. I use the Roots as an example because the Roots, one, they're not a hip-hop band. They just a straight-up band. You know what I'm saying? I don't know why people call them a hip-hop band. Maybe because Thought is a rapper. So they figured, they're a hip-hop band. No, the Roots is actually a band. You know, I don't want to call them an R&B band, but more of a funk band with a rapper.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, it's different with us because when we came out, there was nobody doing what we was doing as an act, as a group. I mean, yeah, you had Larry Smith who played bass or played, certain instruments on the records, but that's how musicians playing on records before sampling got a lot more out of control. You had no rap acts that were a band. Pumpkin and the All-Star was not a hip-hop band. They were a bunch of musicians who just put themselves together and called themselves Pumpkin and the All-Stars. You know what I'm saying? So there's a big difference of when we pinned ourselves as a hip-hop band. What we did was, or what Daddy-O did was, recruited everybody that was going to make a difference in this piece. Where DBC was recruited because he played keyboards. You know what I'm saying? And of course, Prince Paul as a DJ, but we said, we're not going to let Prince Paul just play the records and the guys rap over the instrumental. We was like, nah, Paul, find scratches that sound like guitars or anything, and we make your own sound with the turntable. You know what I'm saying?
I'm sorry, I don't want to sound like a debate or nothing, but I just want to try to understand, because, I'm one that would say that the Roots were a hip-hop band, because I'm hope that you can clarify it for me, but they kind of mirror you guys. They got the rapper. Well, you guys had several rappers, but
right.
The Roots got several rappers. There's Dice Raw. We forget about Dice Raw and stuff like that. But they have the bassist. They have the keyboardist. They got a human beatbox per se.
Right. But again, that was the difference between them and us. Them, they were a band. They just added the other pieces that symbolize hip hop. They had a bassist, they had a keyboard player, they had a drummer, they had a guitar player. Then it's okay, well, we got our rapper, let's get our DJ, and then let's put Rozelle, the other cat as the beatbox, and it'll symbolize hip hop. It's still hip hop because look at the elements we putting in it, a beatbox. But they were really more of a band than a hip hop band. By them putting a beatbox in, it didn't make them a hip hop band. It was just like, let's just add the elements to it. With us, we formed as that because nobody in the band could play guitar. Nobody could play guitar and synthesize it. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, Paul, find some records with guitar sounds on it and scratch it. Make a guitar sound. So that, and then, I'll give you a perfect example. I remember the first thing that we did in our show. Do you remember this James Brown record? In the beginning of the record, it goes ding, 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 that guitar sound?
Yeah, yes. I remember that. Paul, I don't know the name of it, but I'm just talking about.
What's with that guitar? And he cut it, and he went ding ding. He scratched it like that, and while he was doing that, we was like, "Keep doing that, Paul." And then I just came in and went, "Bop, spot, bop," and he was still scratching that. We was already creating our own sounds with the instruments we had. So since we don't have a guitar player, Paul, you're gonna have to be the guitar player as the DJ. And then DBC just found a crazy bass line that blend with it. So, DBC found that boom, 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 boom. So we were actually the musicians using these pieces that was incorporated in hip hop. And then you had Wise who started going, doing sounds as a beatbox. So he was our human percussionist. So we were already adding these elements without the actual using actual instruments and keyboards. You know what I'm saying? We just kind of utilized the basic stuff to make it more of a stripped down than what you were hearing with the Sugar Hill Gang or Curtis Blow. When you heard Curtis Blow records, you heard full orchestrations.
That's real.
When you heard us, you heard us. When you heard Ghostetza, what did you hear? You heard drums, scratches, and Wise going, pah, pah. That's what you heard. That's what you heard.
I got you.
And that's how we made our records. Same thing with Just Say Stat. Just Say Stat was just a drum machine, scratches, and DBC playing that boom, 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 boom. And then and Paul is on the turntable was going, wick on, wick on, wick on, wick on, wick. You know, so we made out, we created our own style and sound using those elements. The Roots didn't. The Roots was more of a full orchestration band. It was like, we're going to play, just scratch on top of it. We didn't do that. Our orchestration was the drummer, the DJ, and DB find a crazy bass line to give it the bottom. So people, it moves. People.
So basically what you're saying is, so basically what you're saying though is that Stet, it wasn't like what you're saying wasn't a trained band, you know, like music school.
Exactly.
Okay, I got you. I see the difference.
Exactly. Right. So that's why we pinned ourselves. Because think about it. Think about 1983. Nobody was calling himself a hip-hop band in 1983.
Nope.
Nobody was. We pinned that. Well, once we realized what we were going to be, we said straight from the letter, we're the hip-hop band from America, London, and even Japan. You know what I'm saying? It's like we made that clear to people. Every record we did, we pinned hip-hop band. Stetson Sonic, the hip-hop band, and like Sly and the Family Stone, we pinned it. So the Roots, Black Eyed Peas, everybody else cannot pin on Fugees. Cannot pin themselves as being a hip hop band.
Well, the Fugees, they are not even. You didn't mean to say that.
And I always tell people that I said when things are documented, you can't debate me on when things is documented. So I remember one time Lauryn Hill said, "Yeah, you know, she was on MTV," and she said, "We're kind of like a hip hop band." I said, "When I see Lauryn, I'm gonna tell her how you gonna pin yourself as a hip hop band and make it seem like it was invisible." You know what I'm saying?
But the band was invisible because they had no musicians. I mean, right. They had a guitar. I mean, he could play guitar or whatever, but they didn't have no band.
Exactly. So it's like we were already at the we were at, plus not only that, we were big fans of James Brown. We were big fans of Parliament Funkadelic, New Birth, Mandrill. So we wanted to really be more like them, but in our zone. So we figured, okay, we don't have no horn section. How can we get horn sound? Well, Paul, you're going to have to be the guitar player, the horn player. You're going to have to be all that. Find records that gives us those elements. And that's what Paul did.
That's what's up.
Why you think that's hip hop?
Why you tell us sound the way it sounds? Because Paul orchestrated that with scratching and mixing different records.
Wow.
That's real.
I mean, think about think about on the Info Gear album that song Step Full and Stephanie Insane. That's a musical interlude Paul put together with different records.
Yeah, indeed.
So exactly. Yeah. So it's like we were already at that edge of being that band, and we wanted to prove to people that. And Jam Master Jay said that to us on the first day of that Runs House tour. When we finished our show, he said, "That's kind of crazy what you guys do." He said, "Because you guys don't sing behind a record. Because most DJs will play the instrumental, and the rappers will rap over the instrumental. We never did that. When we got on stage, do your position. Bobby play the drums, DB play the bass, Paul scratch the records. We never sang or performed behind instrumentals. We never."
Oh, that's what's up.
Yo, Bobby.
That's Jay said it to us when we got.
I got to ask you. Got to ask you a personal question. You used to DJ at the Latin Quarter?
Sir.
Wow, that's incredible. So I'm going to ask you, along with the Latin Quarters, the Roxy, the Fever, the Rooftop, Union Square, did you DJ at any of those other clubs just exclusive at the Latin Quarters? And did you know the DJs at them other clubs?
Oh, yeah, I knew pretty much all those cats. I mean, well, I was more exclusive with Latin Quarters because of the fact a friend of mine who's now deceased was actually the guy who actually got me in Latin Quarters. His name was Eddie Bell. I actually wasn't there to DJ. I was actually there just to kind of see what was going on. They was talking about doing some hip-hop nights, you know what I'm saying? Because when I got there, they had more of a Friday night, a 5 o'clock to midnight event where it was a lot of Haitians and Jamaican music. So Raul, DJ Raul, who was the original DJ at the Latin Quarters, but Raul pretty much played a lot of the freestyle music. So there wasn't really much hip-hop music then. Back then, it was more or less like playing the freestyle records like C-Banks and the Planet Patrols and whatever records that was more dance. Shannon, Let the Music Play. He was more of a house and freestyle DJ. One night, for some strange reason, Raul never showed up. We don't know what happened. I mean, he's well now, but that particular night, he never showed up. So at the time, Paradise, who was in the group X-Clan.
Yes.
Paradise was asked him and Cassandra... was actually Cassandra Wilson was her name. Cassandra was actually they were the ones that were in charge of booking acts and doing hip hop nights at the Latin Quarters. So Paradise, they needed a DJ. They was telling the owner at the time, Mike Goldberg, they was like, yo, we don't have no DJ and Red Alert is not gonna get here until 1 o'clock. Cause Red Alert was the special guest DJ. So I told Paradise, I said, yo, Paradise, man, I DJ, man. He's like, you serious, B? I said, yeah. So he said, yo, go up there. And I did my thing, and people was really surprised. Like, yo, you really know how to DJ, my dude. Like, so, you know, I held it down until Red Alert got there. And I remember Paradise said, yo, since we don't know if Raul's coming back, Mike wants to hire you as a personal DJ at the Latin Quarters. I spent at the Latin Quarters for about a year. For a whole year, I spent at the Latin Quarters. And Red Alert, I remember Red Alert. I'll never forget what Red Alert told me. Red Alert, he said, Red said, yo, who's the dude up in the booth there? Because at that time, Red didn't know me. He said, who's the guy up in the booth DJing? He said, yo, that's Bobby Simmons, man. He's from Brooklyn. He's from Brownsville. And Red was like, yo, it's kind of crazy how he got these people on the floor, you know. But that's because back then, you played the right records. People was on the floor. And I was rocking everything. I rocked Nobody Beats the Biz. I rocked South Bronx. I rocked Ref New Generation. I rocked Kumo's Go See the Doctor. Anything that was hot, I rocked it. You know what I'm saying?
Gotcha.
I rock Master of the Ceremonies. I'm sexy. Remember that?
Yeah, of course.
I rocked all of that, and I knew that was going to keep the floor banging. And you know, and it worked. And Red Alert was like, "Yo, you know, let him open up for me every time before I come on." And ever since then, me and Red has been like the coolest dude till this day. Until this day, Red will tell you. You talk to Red, say, "Yo, Red, you know what you think about Bobby?" And he'll tell you, he'll be like, "Yo, first time I saw Bobby, I couldn't believe that he even could DJ." And Red always gave me that love because we respected him. He was the hottest DJ at that particular time.
Right.
So it was like, this was an honor. So yeah, but all the other clubs like Rooftop and Fever, I played at the Fever one time, but I never really played that Rooftop. I was more of a performer there, like when we performed in the Rooftop or when we performed at Fever or like when we performed at Red Parrot, all those clubs. We was more performers in there, but the Latin Quarters, I just kind of got that gig because Paradise was like, yo, we need a DJ. We don't have a house DJ. And that's how I was able to get that spot at the Latin Quarters.
You were right there.
At the same time I was DJing at the Latin Quarters, we was also working on the second Stead album. And we were working on the Free South Africa record at that time. So we were in between finishing up new products and new records. And then again, I was on tour with Lilo Thomas because I was a drummer. So even when I was in Stead, I was touring with R&B artists as a drummer. So I went out with Lilo Thomas. I toured with the Foursome D's when we did that New Edition tour. The Awful Love tour was New Edition, Foursome D's and Sherelle. We did that tour. Yeah. I toured with as Natalie's drummer. So I was out gigging as a drummer at the same time too.
So was Daddy-O finding you like James Brown?
You know, it was funny, man. We never got fined because, in fact, I was the only one who always remembered the time in and the spots. They always done that. They remember. You know, they're telling me so they don't know their lyrics. I have to shout the lyrics out to them.
Oh, like, wow. Like,
you know, your part. So it's like, nah, I never got fined, man. I was always the one who was like really directing everybody, like, no, we going this way or we going that way, and this is not the best part. And so, nah, I never got fined. But you know something? Now that you bring it up on memories, maybe I should have fined Daddy on and Fruit Corner them back then.
Should have pocket change, huh?
So, yo, how do you forget your lyrics?
That's what's up.
Don't cost you, Bobby.
Yeah. So, Bobby, let me ask you. Did Stetsasonic have a particular recording home? Did you record at the Classic Studios? I'm not saying, I don't know if y'all record at D&D. It wasn't called D&D at that time. Or any of the, did you guys have a recording home or you just recorded wherever?
The main places that we recorded, both actually all three albums. The studio everybody used, even people like Bruce Springsteen. We used, well, for Calliope Studios, we all the hip hop acts recorded in Calliope Studios because Calliope was more cheap. It was in a building near the Empire State Building. It was a penthouse, and it was a really good 24 track, and it was a cheap studio, and we was able to get everything done in there. But when it came down to mixing the stuff, to make sure that we doing a great mix for the album, we all recorded in Green Street Studio Chung King Studio.
Chung King.
That was mainly all our studios. That was Hank Shockley Studios. Think of all the hip-hop producers back then, the rappers. Look on all the albums. Look what studio we was in. Chung King and Green Street.
Yeah, well, those.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying the three that you named are on a lot of recordings.
Yeah, and actually, Bob Powers. Bob Powers was the guy that he did all of our records, Tribe Called Quest records. Actually, it was Prince Paul who introduced Bob to Tribe and all of them. Bob did all of Tribe records, and meaning engineer.
Right.
He did D'Angelo's album, all those stuff, man, because they wanted to mix like raw records.
Yeah, Bob is like a standard, right?
Yeah, Herb always smoking Herb Powers.
Yeah, so those cats, we were introduced to those guys because they weren't recording a lot of rock records, and you know, but when we was doing hip hop records, it was like Jungle Brothers. We all recording it. Jungle Brothers, De La, we all Queen Latifah, we all recording that in Calliope and Green Street, man. It was like that was our introduction to working with engineers who was working with people like Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley. Damn. You know what I'm saying? And here we are, a bunch of newbies, working with these engineers, helping us manifest the sound that we wanted. You know what I'm saying? And to get those kind of records, you know, to make those kind of records, but make them more of in a hip-hop perfection. So it was kind of cool, man. So yeah, Calliope, Green Street, and Chung King was really our main studios, and where we recorded and mixed that, man. And I introduced Teddy Riley to Green Street Studios.
Wow.
I never forget that. I remember I was on this... I can't remember. I think it was either the Rocky V soundtrack. I was producing a song for the Rocky V movie soundtrack.
Damn.
And I remember I was in there finishing it up. And the group I was producing for that was this group called 783. They were from California.
I think I got and, a 12-inch from them.
I think I remember them.
Yeah.
I think I got a 12-inch from them.
Yeah. And Teddy Riley, he came to the studio and he wanted to know what kind of studio this was. I called him in the room. I said, come in. I was in a big room at the time. I was like, come in the room. And he was listening to what I was doing. And he was like, yo, this is cool. And yeah, how much it costs in there? I mean, at the time, he was Teddy Riley. I don't want to make it sound like he was like unknown. At that time, Guy album had just came out, the first album. So he was kind of like searching for studios and kind of seeing what cats was using, the automated board. And I remember I said, come in my room. He thought people just wanted to record privately. And, you know, I was like, nah, come in the room. I'm just working on something. And I showed him the board, the automated board, how it moves by itself. And he was like, oh, shooting. Yeah, man. I remember all those cats, man. We kind of came across a lot of dudes when we was doing our records, man. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people was happy working with us, because we were different. I mean, if you look back at the history, I don't care what you say, all the Limp Bizkits and all these guys, they were fans of Stetsasonic and Public Enemy. When we was on tour in London, the Red Hot Chili Peppers was on tour in London, and they came to see us.
Hey.
Yeah.
We was like, y'all heard Stetsasonic? Flea was like, hell yeah. We was like, are you serious? Yeah. Y'all heard the info album?
Let me ask you this question, though. You got and I like to try to make a connection between the past and the present. So if we're looking at now, there's a lot of money floating around in rap music. I'm going to say rap music. I'm not going to say hip hop. There's a lot of money floating around in rap music, right? And it really wasn't floating like that back then. But what back then was happening that as an artist that you saw, whether it was y'all or the genre in general, that you wish that you could see now in today's game?
Well, I mean, you know, you have to remember, rap music, hip-hop was pretty much something that was being tested. People were still thinking, well, okay, they're 5 years in deep, but it's going to fade away. So no one really didn't have their finger on it. It wasn't until the MC Hammer moment, the NWA moment. When that happened, they started realizing, like, okay, something different is happening here. And it's happening big, and we need to get on this boat. I used MC Hammer in NWA because of the fact that by the time MTV started letting white boys and white girls in the suburban areas see what we were doing, NWA and MC Hammer caught the very tip of that. Because prior to that, TV kind of stayed more like your independent video television, only specifically playing certain specific videos. Let's be safe with it. Salt and Pepper, Jazzy Jeff, Fresh Prince. Well, let's be safe with it. We could play the Big Daddy Kanes. Let's create a show just for those videos. So they were still being safe with it. By the time MC Hammer and numbers started breaking and cracking with NWA, like, wait a minute, this group is selling records without us? We can't allow this to happen. And I'm talking about legitimate records. I'm not talking about out of your trunk car records. We talking about through Scan sound system. NWA selling how many units through Scan? Who the hell is these guys? And that's when the industry was like, we need a piece of this. This cannot happen like Motown. This cannot happen like Stax Records. This cannot happen like those guys. Let's get in on it. So we couldn't really put our finger on it then, because there were commercial advertisements back then for rappers. I mean, Curtis Blow did a Sprite commercial. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Curtis Blow did a Sprite commercial, but they still didn't believe that Curtis Blow was big enough to be like this real huge moneymaker. So it was out there. They was trying to figure out, well, where is it going to go? How big will it expand? You know, is it going to die like disco tonight? Okay. Yeah, we 35 years deep now. They understand it. They get it.
Right.
They get it. So back then, the same things was happening. It's just that they got a lot more money to throw in it. And then they really propaganda a whole lot of this stuff. It's like, well, we can sell something that matters. I hate to switch topics on you, though we staying in hip hop. But it's like I'm telling all my friends about the Bruce Jenner thing, man. Stop it, man. Stop it, everybody. Let's be for real. You know what I'm saying? Is this the greatest spin PR work that anybody can do in Hollywood? You know what I'm saying? Like, come on, stop it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, come on. You make it sound like we're not in the 21st century, man. We're in the 21st century. This is not breaking news to us.
No doubt.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
no doubt. He's not the first.
I mean, come on, man. Stop it. I even went around asking people, what's the difference between Bruce Jenner and RuPaul? People try to come up with excuses, but you can't. There's nothing different about them. They both in drag. Stop. You know what I'm saying?
That's what's up. No doubt. So really, so what we're going to do, we're going to wind it down, but I got some quick rapid fire questions. Just from your perspective, best MC of all time?
Wow. Why you doing this to me?
You're putting him on the spot.
You know.
You're going to have niggas calling him up.
Nah, I don't want to call him up. Just, you know, his own personal perspective.
I mean, what are you giving me, a list or just one?
No, just, well, I'll tell you what. You can name your, let's say, best couple. Couple, like, three.
Couple, okay. Damn, man. I mean, I was in hip-hop for a minute. I came across a lot of cats that.
That's what I'm saying.
I would have to say, Melly Mel is, to me, had to be, and I would say still, to be one of the greatest delivery rap I've ever heard.
No doubt.
On a record like The Message. I mean, people can say what they want, but you can't fool yourself. When you heard that, and here's the funny thing about Melly Mel with that too. He said that rhyme on three records, and they all came out the same way in delivery. Now, A Child Is Born With No State Of Mind was sent on Super Rapping first. Then he said it on The Message. Then he said it on Survival.
Yes, he did.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like when you could do that and get away with it and nobody's saying, oh, you running out of rhymes, you good. So I would say Melly Mel is, I can't make him invisible. KRS-One is another one.
Okay, so that's two. Melly Mel, KRS.
But you put me in a you put me on a spot, man.
You ain't gotta say Drake, man. You ain't gotta say Drake. Don't do it.
No disrespect, and I say peace to Drake. But Drake, you ain't even in this school.
See what I did? I done pulled a Vlad.
Yeah,
damn.
You did.
Drake ain't even in his school, man. You ain't in his school. This is, yo, I'm not trying to rag on any of the new rappers today, man, but I will say this about some of them. Some of them I like. I like Kendra. I like Kendra Lamar. I like him. You know what I'm saying? Kendra, but a lot of these other cats, man, you know, a lot of these cats, man, on the real, seriously, y'all cats are only, you're followers. You ain't leaders. Rakim is a leader. Yeah. That's one of my other MCs.
Well, okay. There you go. Okay. So the next rapid fire, best DJ.
Oh, best DJ?
Best DJ.
You, right?
Best DJ to me, Chazzy Jaff.
Whoa, there you go.
There you go. That's number one on all our list. He is number one.
Consensus.
Because when we did that tour with them, on that Run's House tour, the things he did, like, man, back then, whew, like, yo, are you serious? So, you know, Jazzy Jeff is definitely, for me, I'm sorry, Jazzy Jeff, definitely.
And he's still doing it.
They're definitely still doing it. Prince Paul, I have to big my man up because, again, Prince Paul was the type of dude that would take different kind of records and take the record off the turntable and put another one on less than maybe 10 seconds and cut it in. Okay. Like, he was really that quick and on time. It wasn't like he did it sloppy. It was like, you know, like really crazy. I know a lot of other DJs going to get mad at me since you told me top, you told me pick three, DJ Scratch.
Oh, yes.
Nice. Scratch is very nice.
Yes.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know what I mean? And these are cats that, again, these are cats that I toured with. I mean, DJ Scratch, we was out on tour together, the EPMD tour, when we did Europe. And like, yo, these cats are really on their game as a DJ. You know what I'm saying? So those are the cats that I know. I mean, I hate to leave Jam Master J out. I shouldn't, so you should let me put four in. Jam Master J is definitely one of them. Because before you let me go, there's one thing I will say about Run DMC. When we did that tour, Run's House tour, though we toured with Run DMC before, we did the Fresh Fest with them. That was with Houdini and the Fat Boys, Menudo, New Edition, and stuff like that back then. But watching Jam Master J conduct the music by bringing D and Run out, even Grandmaster Flash couldn't even figure out how to do something like that.
Yeah, that's real. That's real. That's real.
To see Jam Master J go, to get the crowd excited by going, Napita, 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 Piper, Pick, Peppers, and the crowd went crazy, like, oh, he getting ready to do it. It was like the DJ was so important.
That is so true.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, so true, yes. Indeed. So,
because once you heard the DJ scratch, everybody ran to their seats. It was like, oh shoot, they're getting ready. It was like the DJ was important.
I know, right?
I was getting ready.
Yeah, exactly. We was one of the people in the crowd.
Yes, indeed.
You know what I mean?
You know what I'm saying? And every time we would finish our show, I would sit like in like one of those empty seats in the balconies, and I would watch Run DMC show every city went to. Because I never saw nobody, even to this day in hip hop, have such a demand on an audience the way Run and D did.
That's real.
So I've seen a lot of rappers. I told KRS-One, I told a lot of people, but Runner, there was something crazy about what Running them did.
So I got to get the last question.
Hold on. After you get this, I do have to put the exclamation point on there.
Okay.
There's something that hasn't been asked, but you go ahead and then I get it.
All right. For me, the last question. You're right. You've been in hip hop a long time. Do you have a favorite record? Not just Stet, not just yours. It could be Stet, but just in hip hop general, a personal favorite record of all time for you.
Wow, personal favorite record for me, all time for me?
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of them, but there's one that stand out the most, man, and I'm telling you, that Public Enemy, Rebel Without a Pause. Woo, oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness, man. Me. What?
A Latin Quarters, that would start a fire in a Latin Quarters. As soon as they heard crazy. That yes, and the crowd started doing the Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
That shit called and the riot.
It doesn't hurt that he mentioned the LQ in the song.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, that to me is the ultimate crazy hip-hop record ever.
That's, you know what real. I'm saying?
And then there's some others behind it, but that's one for me. All
right.
Because it had that dangerous intro. First of all, you had to listen to Farrakhan at the beginning.
Right.
Brothers and sisters.
And then, yes, it was like, that was it.
Well, Chuck's That's voice it. Dropped so powerful.
I know.
And I remember Melly Mel, before Public Enemy got big, Public Enemy performed at the Latin Quarters to kind of test out who they were going to be when they first got signed to Def Jam. And I remember Melly Mel called them fake G.I. Joes.
Wow.
Ooh, wow.
Oh, Melly Mel got history here, huh?
Yeah. He called the S1Ws a bunch of fake G.I. Joes. I was like, yo, wow. Mel.
G.I. Joes and Milli Vanilli.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
But anyway. So for real, this is a serious question right here. And this question comes from our angry intern, Diff. He would like to know, is Stetsasonic done? And if so, how did that happen?
No, that's not done. I mean, to make a long story short, what happened with Stet was that we owed Tommy Boy a fourth album. We did three albums. We did, of course, On Fire, Info Gear, Blood, Sweat, and No Tears. At the particular time, everybody was having great success individually. Prince Paul was having success with De La Soul, Big Daddy Kane, Third Base. Daddy O was having success with, Mary J. Blige and working with Third World and working with B-52. Me and Daddy O was doing the Red Hot Chili Peppers records. I was producing Houdini's fourth album when they got signed to MCA. So we was having separate great success producing records. What happened was that, we wanted off Tommy Boy. And Tommy Boy didn't want to let us off. They wanted their fourth album. Russell Simmons offered Tommy Boy money to buy us off Tommy Boy so that we can sign with Def Jam.
Wow.
Turned it down. So we just said, well, you know what? If there's no group, you don't get no album. Disband the group.
Wow.
We disbanded the group. We came back together back in 94. We did an independent record that never got released. We did a couple of show dates off and on. So at a point right now, we're working on just a single that I'm going to package with Rhino Records. Stetsasonic. We're not going to call it a greatest hits album, but we're going to put all the songs like On Fire, Just Say Stet, Go Stets, Faye, Sally, all the songs on that package with one brand new song. And test that with the new market as well as with the old market. So we're still in effect. We're still doing shows together every now and then. When someone wants to book us, we'll do a concert. So we're not dead. We're just trying to figure out how to continue to fit in with this new generation. And we don't have to, because a bunch of Korean and Chinese kids unfound us.
Man, that's real. Saying?
That's what's go. Up.
That's real.
I got a bunch of NYU kids, NYU Korean Chinese people talking about their favorite album of ours is Blood, Sweat, No Tears. And we're like, are you serious? You mean some of you like here? And like, but you have to realize this was a 1990s album, so you have to realize all these Korean and Japanese kids was just getting into hip hop,
right?
So they found. So we have a newfound success with a bunch of Orientals and Korean and Chinese kids.
That's what's up.
So we're trying to find our way in. So to answer the person's question, nah, we're on the move, and you're about to hear something like it in 30 seconds.
There it is.
All right.
All right.
No doubt. So well, we want to thank you. Sir. Yes, sir. Oh,
definitely.
Indeed. That was awesome.
Enjoyed it.
Good looking. So I say to Daddy O, because I know you're listening now. Yo, Daddy O, man. Next time, man, you tell a story right about the Capitol Center. You let them know that night we rocked, but Chuck Brown and Soul Searchers murdered. You know what I'm saying? We didn't go front. Did what? And once again, before y'all let me go. Before y'all let me go, because I know they're going to hear this, big shout out to my man Eric in Paris, EPMD. We boys. We boys. We respect them. The craziest hip-hop album of 1988 to me, maybe different for everyone. Well, actually, it's two. It was Slick Rick, Great Adventures, Slick Rick, and EPMD, Strictly Business.
That's real.
Big out to Eric in Paris. Chuck Brown and Soul Searchers murdered y'all that night.
Oh, yeah. Anti-Vlad, baby. Anti-Vlad.
Yep.
That's what's up.
So, yo, man.
Word up, baby.
I'm going to be in touch.
So, anytime y'all want to rap again, just holler at me, D, or anybody else. We got y'all. All
right. That's what's up.
I'm going to use you as a resource, man.
Oh, definitely. Yo, man. Like D said, D and them always. Here's the deal, fam. People call me. Like, whenever, somebody want to do old-school hip-hop shows, they call me because I'm in touch with all the old-school hip-hop artists.
Wow.
So, if they need Brand Newbie, and they can't contact them, they go, yo, Bobby, you know how to get in touch with Brand Newbie? I'm like, yeah, I got Pooba's number. I can call Pooba or, Milk D. Somebody wanted to book Milk D for a show we just did a month ago at the casino here in New York. I call Milk. Yo, Milk, somebody want to book you for a show. So people call me when they looking for like all the old school hip hop artists, because I'm in touch with everyone from MC Light to Nikki D. You know, I'm in touch with all of them.
Well, so I'm in touch with you.
That's what I'm saying. That's what people do. People be like, yo, you know how to get in touch with, you know, like they'll throw a name out there like, oh, shoot. But, I'm usually in touch with them. Like me and Sweet T, me and Sweet T is getting ready to do something. And she's actually, she got me putting together a band.
Damn.
For her. She wants to do something like for the band. So I'm in touch with all of them, man. Like they'll call me or I'll reach out to them and, you know, let them know that somebody want to book y'all for a gig. Like, what's your schedule look like? So, yeah, I'm in touch with all of them. So they call me, man. They be like, yo, Bobby, I need to get in touch with 357. You know what I'm saying?
All right. That's what's up.
I'm going to hit you on Monday when we get the link all done, and I'll just forward you the link so you can get it out there to everybody in the world you want to get it to.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I put it on a blast, man. I got me a blast thing, man. Like, people definitely be like, yo, if it's going down, all right, get on. It's a blast. And I put a heading on mine too, like let them know, get in this. Because, you know, I like for people when they check stuff out, man, information is definitely the key. I've done some school speakings. I did Mecca Evers College here like 3 months ago. Wow. You know, I just kind of give college kids information about certain things that I've experienced. And so anytime that you can be able to give information to people, man, about something at least that you've experienced or know.
Right.
Man, we're the most non-profitable group in the history of hip-hop. Mm. Chuck D will tell you. He's saying, because we do it for real.
That's so true. We are
literally
yes.
to the hood. Like, when most rappers would be like, well, how much is it going to cost to get me to come out there? We'll be like, yo, what's the problem? We'll be out there.
Right. That's what's up.
Respect.
Different thing. And we make jokes about ourselves about that, but we understand it. Like, we'll talk to people and be like, yo, we're the most non-profitable rap group in hip-hop, and but it's because it's what we understand.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So if it's for real, we there. If it's not for real, we know how to eliminate ourselves from that sector. But majority of times, people is looking for us to really participate. And that's why I'm really upset with a lot of leaders, because when something's happening in the hood, they looking to get a big name celebrity, and a big name celebrity is not really in the hood like that.
Right.
No doubt.
Never. You know what I'm saying?
You know, where we can actually go, we'll go there like, yo, come on, man. We ain't got a problem with it. And I'm not beating up on Jay-Z or nobody. I'm just saying, like, those kind of guys, they go through those political channels. When we did the Africa record with the Reverend Jesse Jackson, we didn't go through no political channels. It was like, what you want us to do, Mr. Jackson?
Damn.
And we did.
Yeah, that's.
And then when it came time for us to go to Africa, we didn't get paid for the Africa show. Everybody else did. We didn't. We went because we wanted Della, and we wanted to let him know that we did history, that Reverend Jesse Jackson gave us information about what was going on in Africa, and we did our studies, and that's why we did the record. So now you can look at the White House, what's the White House, they got like this Hall of Fame thing, and our lyrics and our record is in that.
Damn.
For the Free Africa campaign. But nobody really talks about that, man. So that's why we gotta speak about it. You know, word. They'll talk about, you know, something else somebody did in hip-hop, like 50 Cent, you know, and it's like, yeah, but these cats, we've been in, you know, but we don't complain. We just keep doing what we're doing.
That's
you
real.
You know, when you know it's from the heart.
We'll get the information. Right. People get the information. And that's where those Korean and those white kids come in from, because, you know, they want to be, or most of them seem want to be liberals, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So they're like, well, let's go to him. To him, he's like Gil Scott Heron, you know what I'm saying? So they go to the real source. So, yeah, man, anytime you guys want to party about anything, man, we're a phone call away.
All right, my brother, good looking. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Stay well. Take care.
And I keep y'all posted on anything else.
All right.
All right.
All right, baby.
Great weekend, man.
I'll talk to y'all in a minute.
All right.
You too.